Hello and good evening. This is 42 Minutes, a production of ThinkBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day, a show that's willing to consider the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything for a community utilizing synchronicity as a way to make sense of a strange and beautiful universe. Today is room 327, and this is episode number 77. I'm Douglas Bowles, and tonight, under a full moon, we are going to get on with this kingkill.
And just in time for Easter. Hello, I'm Will Morgan, and tonight's Divine Revelation on 42 Minutes will be shared with Alan Abadesa Green, the editor-in-chief at Sync Book Press, and the editor of the Sync Book and the Sync Book Volume 2. Alan is the author of the 2011 book Look at All the Happy Creatures, and the forthcoming Sync Book Press release, Suicide Kings. More information about his various projects can be found at his web portal, allthehappycreatures.com. In some circles, Alan is known as the Sync Pimp, and us, his little sink hoes. And he is also one of our dear friends here at 42 Minutes. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing very well. What's up, hoes?
What's up, bitches? Don't pimp slap me. Anyways,
so congratulations. Wonderful intro.
Is that okay if I just call it Suicide Kings? Because there is sort of a
yes.
Subtitle, isn't it?
Yeah, that long extra title is it's a long story. It's sort of require a lot of context. I think I've just been calling it Suicide Kings is the nice way to refer to it. And basically, I don't think people even figure out what that subtitle means until they're about at least a third or halfway through the book. So,
okay. Well, first question that I would have for you is, what is the purpose of this book?
It's a bit of personal therapy for me, I think. Basically, doing sync blogs, as you know, so many people in this community. But I constantly think about an early issue I had when I came upon it, particularly when I came upon like the sinkhole. I always found it sort of confusing and disjointed, just these sort of endless threads of connecting things, and I was trying so hard to figure out what was being conveyed, what was I supposed to get out of it.
I hate those guys.
This was my honest reaction when I was first coming to this stuff. I was very well versed in conspiracy research, and then I started getting into synchronicity. I'm finding even like the early Kotze videos would kind of take you through step by step what he was showing you. And then when I got into the blog side of it, like I said, for example, the sinkhole, it seemed very disjointed, and I was trying to figure out what it was that was being conveyed. And then eventually one day it clicked, and I think I had to come back to it maybe a month or two later with some extra context. And then somebody clicked, and I said, okay, I get what they're doing here, and they're just sort of not explaining what they're doing, but they're just sort of going right into this practice. Regardless, when I did my blog, I always tried to give context, and I struggled over and over and over again to try and explain what it was that I was doing, both sort of if someone came to my blog for the first time, and it's a year or two into blogging, I still wanted them to be able to kind of get an idea of what was going on. And I'd always kind of try and I just found myself repeating myself. And the other thing is that I noticed I was very much attracted to this archetype. My very first blog post or my first few was about Osiris, mm-hmm. who is the Egyptian king kill, the classic OG king kill. And I noticed that I was really, really fixated on this archetype, and I kept coming back to it. And it took me about a year or two to even realize that I was doing that. Long story short, I wanted people who came to my blog that I didn't have to explain to them that all the tracking that I've been doing of this pattern and giving them 50 million links. So, oh, there was this post and this post and this post, and this is what synchromysticism is. And to repeat that every time I wanted to do a blog was really annoying. And I just said, screw it, I'm going to write essentially the blog post to end all blog posts. I'm just going to write a 300-page blog post and put all what I've learned over the last few years and everything into one concise thing where I can say, if someone asks me, well, what's synchromysticism or what does this kingkill archetype mean or anything, I could just say, read this. I'm tired of explaining it.
So do you consider this a synchromystic book?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd have to. It really is like it's essentially a giant blog post. Of course, I've had to. Medium is the message, right? So it's had to be adapted for book form. So the tone's a little different, and the format, of course, is slightly slightly changed. It's more appropriate. And basically giving it a sort of overall aesthetic and an overall presentation, but it really is a synchromistic book. Something that actually was Crystal Knarr gave me a compliment on one of my blogs. I did this one really long blog post, synchromistic blog post, and I tied together all these themes, and she just wrote me this really nice comment which said, "I can't believe you put all that into... laid that out in such a way that it actually made sense." And I realized, whether it's my background as a writer, I don't even think I'm a particularly good writer, but I do have this skill for figuring out, I have this huge story in my mind, how do I organize these thoughts in such a way that this event happens and this event happens and this event happens. It comes really naturally to me. So there's something about taking this like really crazy interconnected web of ideas and interconnections, which doesn't easily translate into something linear. You know, writing is linear, reading is linear, synchronicity is not. So it's like I seem to have this skill for figuring out how to lay out this 3D, 4D, 5D model in essentially a 2D linear narrative that you can walk someone through it step by step. And that was, I thought, the best, best thing I could do.
So what do you make of tonight? I mean, this, in perfect sync fashion, just kind of happened. So we have Easter, we have a full moon, we are episode 77, today's the 27th. It's not room 237, but 327 is as close as you can get with months and days.
Oh, it's 327. I was like, "Why?"
I heard you
say
that. Yeah, I thought you when I was listening to the intro.
Today is room 327. I was like, another typo. But I get it. It's March 27th.
It's March 27th.
Yeah, that's highly appropriate. Yeah, for sure. This book is another sort of dip into room 237 for me. I think Look at All the Happy Creatures was definitely that. It was a really dark period in my life, and I was processing all that information through writing. And so I say it was sort of therapy for me to try and take all this stuff and turn it into artwork somehow. And this is definitely another step into that room, but at this point, I think I've matured. I've developed my sense of what all this stuff means, and I think I got my sense of humor back. So, I'm able to take this stuff, and there's no way that I'm going. We're talking about assassinations. We're talking about JFK. We're talking about 9/11. We're talking about some pretty, messed up things. But I think I was always a huge fan of Kurt Vonnegut, he does this stuff where he writes a book that makes you keep laughing. You're constantly laughing and at the same time constantly shaking your head. Oh my God, that's so messed up. Oh my God, that's so messed up. He's dropping like really hardcore truths on you that make you think and make you, not really sugarcoating it, but at the same time putting it in such a way that makes you laugh. And there's some sort of expression that says like, if you're going to tell someone the truth, you're going to piss them off. So if you really want to tell someone the truth, you have to make them laugh. So I think getting my sense of humor back, feeling a lot better about my own headspace, I'm able to take the nuggets that I found in room 237 or go back into some of these headspaces, but lay them out in such a way that I think are a lot easier to read, whereas... Look at All the Happy Creatures is like really brutal and hard to process. This is very easy. It's actually really light reading, I think. I went through a couple different versions of writing it, and ultimately I just found this sort of way to do it that I think really, really worked.
The thing that's interesting to me is that, like you said, there's something... it seems serendipitous about when we're talking about this book right now, because in the book I've noticed that you're dealing a lot with the conflict between sync and conspiracy.
Oh yeah, it's like, whereas a lot of people either don't want to have that conversation or it's really difficult to have that conversation, I'm like, screw it, I want to have that conversation. And, you know, it's funny because I'm in a really weird position to do all this stuff. I think it's one of the reasons why I did SyncBook Volume 2. I put a lot more conspiracy-minded people into the book, right, was to say, hey, listen, this is another approach. These are people who take a different point of view as to what all this means. You know, it doesn't mean SyncBook 2 is all conspiracy, but I'm saying I did make sure to cover some more interpretations. And at the same time, it's not that, it's funny because, like, as this guy who's just been reading all these blogs, who's processed all these different perspectives, and then having worked so closely with everyone and getting a real sense, I feel like even a deeper sense of getting to know people and speak to people and talk some of these things out, I imagine with you guys doing 42 Minutes, it's a similar sort of thing. You start to get a better appreciation of where people are really coming from in their writing and all this sort of stuff. And at the same time, it doesn't mean that I agree with them anymore. You know, it just means that I get a better understanding of where it comes from. And I've been really kind of a little bit frustrated of how I feel particularly it's hard for me to have this conversation because as the quote-unquote sync pimp, right, I'm presenting a whole community of ideas and I can't say, hey, I agree with this guy, I don't agree with this guy. It feels almost like playing, you know, favorites to your children. And I hope no one takes that offensive. Most of the people in the sync book are, you know, I respect them very, very, very much, and I feel like they have a lot more seniority and credibility than I probably do. But like I said, it's this sort of weird social position that I've taken on within the community, not as a leader, but as some sort of weird coordinator that I've almost felt like my own thoughts have had to take a back seat to trying to present everyone's ideas and trying to really present a really fair and balanced cross-section of the community. And at the same time, my own ideas have been developing and developing and developing. So where I come from essentially is that I still consider myself a conspiracy theorist. Like, you know, someone pulled the fucking trigger on JFK, you know?
So now, yeah. I had that argument tonight. So apparently there is this physicist who debunked the moon conspiracies, like very effectively with Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan was a big moon conspiracy guy. Like, mm-hmm. So this is what came up tonight, and so...
Oh, are you saying so JFK's head blew up, like the wind?
No. This is... We're getting... So, like, there's no doubt that he was assassinated.
Right.
And it
right.
seems like, you know, there's a story about what happened, and then there are questions as to the validity of that story. And then you can take a lot of the various details and create your own story. You know, that could be like the conspiracy. Or, there, you know, so conspiracy means what?
Well, I think when it comes to conspiracy, right, the real heart of the matter is, right, is conspiracy means intent. And synchronicity, most of the time when someone says, it's a sync, means that wasn't planned. No human planned that. That was...
But part of that is, like, larger planning. And that's where you get into this, the soupiness of this book, is that who's
yes.
really pulling the strings.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's funny because I feel like the two are so interrelated. It's like when someone says to me, it's all sync. It's just sync, you know. Like, no. It's all sync. It's like, well, you can't take out the human intent. Like, we intended. You said to me, hey, would you like to come on 42 Minutes in a few weeks? I said, sure. It turned out to be episode 77, which is pretty central to the book. That number, right? It
right.
turned out to be a full moon. It turned out to be 327. It turned out to be all these things that it's right around
Easter. Purpose.
What's that?
I said, fuck you, I did that shit on purpose.
But this
I'm
is
William Morgan, bitch. I'm the anti-fucking Mason. I'm pulling some strings.
Well, you're doing a great job. this
Sorry.
Is, I guess my point that was like, they're not mutually exclusive. So obviously, we intended to get together to do a show. That part is intent. The full moon, we were supposed to actually do this show yesterday, right? And then because of a scheduling conflict, we had to do it today. So like this is not intentional, or you know, this is a synchronicity. So ultimately, like, where the more new agey crowd is saying, it's all just beautiful unfoldment of nature. And I'm saying, yes, but within that, if you want to say zoom out, really big picture, it's all the unfoldment of the universe. Yeah, actually, I think that's a pretty appropriate answer. However, within that, there are human beings with presumably with free will, who or at least a modicum of free will, and they are doing their things. And those things in themselves might be part of a bigger plan, if we want to call this God's plan or the way the universe unfolds or whatever terminology offends you least, go with it. But essentially, right, we're saying, hey, look, some guy pulls a trigger and shoots JFK, and this might resonate with all these other archetypes and all these other synchronicities come around it. So there's this conspiracy crowd that says, no, that's Masonic sorcery. There's this guy, James Shelby Downard, who wrote his essay, King Kill 33, and he's saying this is all Masonic sorcery. He's pointing out synchronicities. He's like synchromistic, you know, 1.0, and he's saying, hey, he really does a good job of laying out all these synchronicities, but he constantly keeps saying it's evil Masonic sorcery. I swear, if I counted the number of times he uses the word evil in this essay, which isn't even that long, it would be it's probably 77 times. You know, he's really hitting the nail over the head. It's evil, it's evil, it's evil. And my thing is like, I'm not even, I don't even think half of this is intentional, let alone evil. You know, and even the stuff that might be in, like what... The whole thing, like, I have such a hard time wrapping my head around, like, someone planned this exactly how, why, to what end, like, and I get this idea of a mega ritual, but the truth is that our lives are mega rituals, you know, without intending them to be, we're living out these grand mystery plays every day, every freaking day. When you go to the supermarket, you're enacting a grand occult ritual. If you can notice that these same archetypes are there, the same symbols, the same, you know, fingerprints of Aleister Crowley, ooh, you know, it's like, get off it, man, because I see that same shit when I go to the supermarket. So I don't think that's, you know, the Illuminati is not hiding behind, you know, the can of tomato sauce. It's just not happening. You know, that doesn't, but then again, it doesn't mean that it's all just beautiful and naturally, like, there are things that there are very practical things that we need to be concerned about. And again, when we're at the supermarket, I wouldn't be so much concerned about, you know, the number 77 or Aleister Crowley that I see these archetypes in the supermarket as evil Masonic sorcery. But when I see genetically modified food on the shelf at my supermarket, I think that's pretty fucking evil. So this is where I take the, like, I take a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. It's like, let's at least understand what we should really be upset about. Let's understand, you know, if anything, let's at least understand what practical use some of this stuff has or where we need to apply some, you know, this idea of like no ego, no ego, no ego. Well, I'm sorry, you know, my ego tells me, you know, not to buy that genetically modified food. I appreciate that survival instinct or that ability to reason. And I don't think it's such a bad thing. But of course, there are those who take that way too hard. And they are only able to process all this stuff through the window of, well, I know what I intended, therefore this is all intentional. Or I know JFK was killed in a quote-unquote conspiracy, therefore everything connected to this event is part of a conspiracy. Do you understand? So it's like, I'm truly trying to wrestle with this huge question, this huge sort of rift within our community. This, it's not like it doesn't, you know, it's not tearing people apart, but I think it's there's a lot of headbutting on this issue, and I'm trying to sort of walk that middle path and say, well, you're both sides of this are kind of right. Yes, there are intentional things that we really need to be aware of, and at the same time, I'm trying to lay out the synchronicities to such an extent where there's no way that anyone planned this. It's just impossible that anyone planned this level of synchronicity. So,
I commend you for your effort. I mean, it's been coming up a lot lately. And it's funny because, like you said, most people don't want to talk about it. It seems that the kind of cosmic consciousness side of the crowd doesn't even want to address the conspiracy. Their idea is to just not even acknowledge it. Don't even bring that energy towards them. And the conspiratorial side always seems to want to footnote, like, oh yeah, those new agey guys, they're full of shit. So one doesn't want to seem to bring it up, and the other one wants to either just bring it up too much or bash the other side of it. And you seem to be a common link for both sides, and you've done that with the Sync books, and I appreciate it, because it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's pretty emotionally exhausting, but I do feel like it's important. I feel like it's really important because I think the conspiracy crowd does a real service, actually. When they're actually doing real research, too often conspiracy guys are not doing real research. But when they are, when there's some sort of investigative journalism aspect to it, or when there's something where people are able to show, and let's be really careful what I mean here. It's like, ultimately, I'm not concerned about did we fake the moon landing. Like, to me, that's a sort of bullshit subject. To be completely blunt, it's a bullshit subject. And I'll tell you really quick why. There's one of two answers to that. Either we didn't fake the moon landing, or we did. Either way, let's say we went to the moon. What was
not there now?
Well, yeah, right. Well, let's say we went to the moon. What did we do? Really, we as the human race have been longing to travel to the moon for thousands and thousands of years, and we finally get there and we plant an American flag on it and say, "Mine, this is mine now."
Mine,
like, no,
mine,
it doesn't work.
Mine,
yeah, exactly.
Mine,
it's
mine.
It's
like
exactly
the fish
what
from
I say.
Nemo.
Yeah, it's these little Nemo seagulls. That's what we did. We acted like little Nemo seagulls. So ultimately, to me, you know, I'm not really proud of that activity, of that behavior. And at the same time, if we didn't, it just means that we faked that we're that pretentious and obnoxious, and we really aren't even that cool. You know what I mean? It's like
we faked being assholes.
It's like, ultimately, it's like this is not.
See,
you know,
I think it's a muddy thing. I mean, I feel the same way about the JFK. After a while, you're like, I don't want to fucking hear any more theories. What does it fucking matter? Like, to me, I think that that's like almost the curtain that is used against us.
I don't even have to worry about.
All you have to worry about is what happened after. You know what I mean? Like all you have to realize is that, okay, what happened? Alan Dulles gets fired by JFK. That much fact, right? Can we agree on that?
That seems like a pretty reasonable assumption.
Was his name Alan? It was Dulles.
Know.
This is where I'm going to – just because I wanted to cut you off, because there's a comment that I saw just recently, which was about this, is the idea that once you start saying it doesn't matter anymore, right? This one was somewhat 9/11. It was the idea of like, you know, what it was so long ago, what does it matter anymore? And I don't feel that way.
Not what I was saying at all.
No, I know that's not what you're saying. I just sort of wanted to put that on it, is that I know that's not what you're saying, but that's –
That's a way it could be taken. I need to retract that. Sorry, that was a bad way of putting it. Go ahead.
So I want to get into some of the meat of actually what's written about here. But just to say real quick, this was something that for me, as a child growing up, I was really fascinated by the JFK assassination, not even so much about wanting to know who did it. Like, it wasn't like I wanted to be Batman, the world's greatest detective, and find out who really killed JFK. That wasn't what fascinated me. It fascinated me from a sort of social consciousness level and the level of, like, national acceptance. So growing up, and, like, I always got this impression. I'm born 1980, right? So I'm a child growing up, and it seems like everyone sort of accepts that JFK was killed in some sort of government conspiracy. It was almost like, yeah, of course. No, of course it was like the CIA, or of course it was whatever.
Right.
And yet no one really, like, there was no revolution, there was no repercussions, there was no outrage. It was just people would talk about, oh yeah, JFK. You know, I would, like, see things on TV, like, here, we're going to talk about the magic bullet. I'm like, why is this? This is an open conversation, and this should be huge. If this is true, this should be the biggest story. If our government killed our president and blah blah blah, right? And then growing up, I'm like, this is so fascinating. How would it feel to have experienced that, and then to sort of look back on it as like, yeah, that happened, but. And then it's funny because I think wanting to sort of know what that felt like, now I've experienced 9/11, right? I experienced 9/11, and here we are, like, 12 years later, and there's still somewhat of a truth movement around it. There's still people who are really trying to fight some sort of, urge to show people what really happened, quote-unquote, because, again, there's so many theories on that as well. But I think as a sort of general whole, so many of the people have sort of gotten tired of the subject one way or the other. They're tired of the wars, or they're just accepted the wars, or they're tired of the debates, or the truthers, you know, kept shouting in their face, sheeple, and they're like, okay, fuck those guys. Whatever happened that turned people off, or just enough time has passed, we're in this sort of state that I, growing up, thought was so weird about JFK, and here I see this same sort of cognitive dissonance with 9/11. And so on one level, that's a conspiracy level, or a social consciousness level, that's fascinating. And then, just to zoom in on that social consciousness level, how do these events really shape social consciousness? And then there's the propaganda side, of course, but we are conscious, cosmic consciousness people. We're having this debate, oh, the cosmic consciousness crowd. Well, that's us, right? Let's say that's us. For real, that's us. So how does this affect us on some sort of higher level? You know, this idea of if people in this moment of shock have their quote-unquote king killed, or they see this attack on America that they thought this country was, you know, invincible or whatever. And then the way people react to this is the same way that people react to psychedelic experiences. It's the same way people react to ego deaths, where it's this moment of shock, and a lot of times this sort of struggle where the ego is still, you know, kicking and screaming to be heard. And that's where you get conspiracy theories. That's where you get wars. That's where you get prejudice and violence and all these sorts of things, all these monsters from the id. And at the same time, we see how this also manifests, particularly, let's say, in the 60s, right? You have all these people taking psychedelics at the same time all these kings are being killed. All these assassinations take place in a time period where people are blowing their minds. And then you see people getting their heads blown off. Right. Now, with 9/11, we have the same sort of thing. And I'll give credit where credit's due. Andras Jones has made the point that JFK is a sign of media emergence, television being in everyone's home, TV and film, and so all this sort of media explosion that everyone could actually see the president killed. This is a sort of really new, first time we're able to do that we're able to press rewind and watch, whatever your feelings on the Zapruder film being real or fake or whatever. The fact that we can watch
that's
that
a good
guy's
point. It was like, you know, when they killed Lincoln, he toured around the country. They didn't have to tour Kennedy because everybody saw it.
Yeah. With 9/11, it's the same thing. And Justin Morgan's made the point that 9/11 marks this huge shift in consciousness because it's the emergence of the internet. So we have this idea that you know, as the as media explodes, so does JFK's head. As the World Trade Center explodes, so does the internet. It's this these weird conjunction of all this sort of stuff. And
my point of saying that it doesn't matter is you don't even have to look at the day that JFK died. What you really need to pay attention to is what happened afterwards. Within 20 years, we had an individual who was the lead of the CIA in the White House. It's almost like having Alan Dulles in the White House 20 years later.
But that would be...
Bush Sr. is who I'm talking about.
I know you don't mean.
But that would be making a lateral connection. Like, you're connecting these two things that...
But my point would be saying that the CIA, if the CIA killed Kennedy, their motivation, right? It doesn't matter if the CIA killed him or not. The CIA got what their motivation for killing Kennedy would have been, would have, so they didn't lose control of the White House. Within 20 years, they had control of the White House.
Very explicitly, yeah, exactly.
And it's the same thing with 9/11. You don't even have to worry about what happened on that day. I mean, the motivation for the U.S. government to do 9/11 would be to have justification to do whatever they wanted to in the Middle East, which they did. And the same thing is true for, you know, Aurora or Sandy Hook or any of that mess. If that was perpetrated, its purpose in being perpetrated would be for gun control, which is happening anyways.
I don't know how much time we have left. It's only 42 minutes, but I'll say that,
10 minutes.
Shit. Okay. So we barely haven't talked about anything, but okay.
We've talked about everything.
We need four more hours to do this right.
So since we seem to be focused more on the politics than the synchronicity tonight, which is sort of my fear with this book is that it's
I wouldn't even go that way, because for me this is like, instead of Suicide King, it's like King Kill. This is ego death. So I'm reading your book from a metaphorical point of view, so what you're doing is you're detailing psychological initiation, you know, like transcendence on a psychological level. So it doesn't even have to be a literal King Kill. But what's so fascinating is that you've taken this mythological structure from a literal King Kill, the JFK assassination, and shown how both this inner state and the outer reality are the same. That, you know, the metaphor and the mythology, it's the same stuff.
Which is so fascinating, because when we get to this, when the debate is ultimately, is it literal or is it metaphor? And these are the moments when this really synchronicity, whatever you want to call this reflection of the inner and the outer, these moments is where the literal and the metaphor are the same. That exactly. It's like these are the moments that we're all shining, pointing to these moments, going, oh my God, look when this happened. That was our literal manifestation of this psychological process. It's funny, I was reading recently Carl Jung's writings about UFOs, what he was trying to figure out, the UFO phenomenon, and he was saying, well, it does seem that there is a literal phenomenon, that sometimes these things show up on radars. He's like, and yet, they're undeniably a projection of psychological processes. So,
right.
You know, he's saying... it's not one or the other. And it's like, that's why when Doug, you're saying to Will, that's a lateral connection. Well, of course, lateral connections are legitimate. You know, if I push this red button right now, I'll hang up on this call. There is a cause and effect. A causality does not mean that there's no such thing as causality anymore. Just the same as causality for all the materialist people, reductionist thinkers who think, well, causality is really easy to prove, therefore there's no such thing as a causality. Why are we so torn by this dichotomy when there are both equally important? There is cause and effect, and there's a causality. So what I'm really focused on in my book, I'm not really detailing conspiracies. I say pretty clearly, hey, you can research all that stuff. I might make certain references to things and saying you could research this a little bit more if you want to. But I'm really trying to lay out the psychological particularly on the collective psyche, saying this is how it would be for an individual. This is what the metaphors flying around this event are. and this is how they would translate to psychological experiences, psychological processes.
Now, you mentioned them at the first of the book. You mentioned the coincidences that most everybody knows about Lincoln and Kennedy. It's funny because this week is spring break for me. I'm off of work, and I was actually doing a lot of spring cleaning. In my desk, I found a Lincoln-Kennedy coincidence paper that my daughter had gotten for me. And you've mentioned some of these, but some of these are crazy. The names John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald each contain 15 letters. Kennedy's secretary, whose name was Lincoln, advised him not to go to Dallas. Lincoln's secretary, who was named Kennedy, advised him not to go to the theater.
The secretary name, for the record, the secretary named Lincoln, I left that out of the book because that seems to actually be not something that's easily verifiable. There's debate as to whether that's a real connection or not.
John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln in a theater and ran to a warehouse. Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy from a warehouse and ran to a theater.
Yeah. It's these sorts of things. It's funny. It's like this whole Lincoln Kennedy coincidence constitutes one paragraph of the book. I just sort of lay it out and say everyone's heard these sort of things. But what's interesting to me is this, of course, this list of set of coincidences comes around into popular consciousness very shortly after JFK gets killed. So this is the other thing to me. It's like not only does JFK getting killed take place in when everyone is expanding their minds psychedelically, when all these other things are happening, we're going into outer space, we're doing all these things. And at the same time, this is one of the first times in history that mass consciousness is playing with a causally connected events, right? The fact that there would be and there would emerge a list of events that are these weird coincidences that get circulated like a modern day meme. The fact that these would spread so quickly, to me, is further evidence of this psychological expansion, expanded consciousness. Even if it's for a moment, even if it's in the state of all these horrific deeds, nonetheless, it's sort of undeniable to me that there is this correlation that, you know, this event happens and boom, right away, what is everyone thinking about? But, you know, essentially synchronicity.
Well, even the family members like Robert experienced the same thing afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. You were talking to me about this. It was actually something I didn't know. The fact that Robert Lincoln was actually either present or very nearby. There's only been 4 U.S. presidents assassinated in history. Robert Lincoln was there for 3 out of 4 of them, which someone could make into a conspiracy, right? Maybe he's the guy pulling all the strings. Or it's the fact that this guy, he was really close when his father got killed, and he regrets, he states that if only I had been there, maybe I would have been able to stop it. And it seems to me that he sort of
manifested a weird feedback loop.
Yeah, he manifested what he wanted. I want to be, if only I was there when the president got shot, maybe I could have done something. And then it happens
then
2 more times.
And he couldn't do it.
That's a good point.
Wow.
So it's really interesting.
Will, you mentioned spring a couple times.
Yeah,
we have a little bit of time, but we should talk about 317, the Green Man, and then the thing that I always forget until we're upon it is Easter is actually it's not a fixed holiday, and so it's I believe the first Sunday after the first full moon past the equinox or the I think that's right.
The
and
first full
what
moon.
To do with Jesus?
It's Passover. Jesus, Jews follow the lunar calendar. So Passover is designated as the first full moon after the spring equinox.
Okay, and then the first Sunday past that is Easter.
Gregory, Pope Gregory.
Yeah, I'm asking a sort of sarcastic question. What does that have to
do
with
Jesus? Jesus is
the king that's getting killed. So it's all the same.
Now, check this
it's
out.
It's funny, right? both Lincoln
what
and...
Is Passover? What is Passover? Right? It's the genocide of the children, right?
Right.
Yeah, it is. But
yes.
Do you smear the ram's blood on your door?
Right, and the angel of death passes over.
Right. So we have the genocide of the firstborn child is Passover, and then Easter is the king being reborn, right? So let's lay some tangents out real quick, some archetypes that people can process. Here we go. Saturn, right? The myth of Saturn, where he eats his children, and then he himself is overthrown. So, you know, Zeus overthrows him. Basically, Saturn overthrows Uranus. He becomes king of the world. Then one of his children prophesies to overthrow him, so he eats all his children. Then Zeus overthrows him, becomes king, and then Zeus is prophesied that one of his children will overthrow him, so he tries to stop that. That's why Athena ends up bursting out of his head after he eats her mother. So we have this connection of killing the children and the king being reborn. Now, King Arthur does the same thing. This is a thing that most people, I never hear this talked about. King Arthur commits a genocide. Okay, he's told, Merlin tells him, your child is destined to overthrow you. Hint, hint, so we know this is the same story. Your child is destined to overthrow you, and he's born on May 1st, May Day. The child born on Beltane is destined to overthrow you. So King Arthur has every child born on May 1st killed to make sure that he gets his bastard child. He commits this genocide. So this great King Arthur that everyone loves commits a fucking genocide. But here we have this connection to this slaughter of the children, the rebirth of the king. These things are so, again, these are sort of really ugly archetypes, and particularly when they manifest in real life. You know, it's one thing to tell a story about Saturn eating his children and go, oh, that's obviously an archetype. When they manifest in real life, they obviously make you uncomfortable. We don't want to think about children dying, and particularly for kings who are usually shitheads. To come into power, we don't really like these sorts of things. But the fact that this architecture is built into the very aspect of nature doesn't take away the importance of the archetype. It's the same way that, you know, when you look at a tarot card, if you see the death tarot card, most people who know nothing about tarot, they go, oh, that's got to be a bad card, right? It looks ugly. It says death. There's people dying on it. And then when you actually understand that card, it's actually not a scary card. So, you know, that's the kind of thing where you can see kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that all these things are so intimately connected. These same things repeat over and over and over again. Now, like John Wilkes Booth,
his father... We're going to have to cut you off and take it to the Green Room album. That's 42. Thank you. You've been listening to 42 Minutes, a production of Sync Book Radio on thesyncbook.com. For more information about the Sync Book, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com/42minutes. Thank you, and have a wonderful room 327. Bye-bye.